Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, hello again, everyone, to the Brad and Body Podcast. We have got an absolute beauty here again today. We've had a number of coaches, but today we've got the guru. I'm talking of a person that's got five NBL championships. That's right. He started his career way back with the Mermaids. What, I think it's Warrnambool. I don't even know.
Warrnambool, Brad. Jeez.
There you go. In 1990, he was an assistant with the Bullets. He then went to the Quad City Thunder, but we all know him when he started his NBL career up in Townsville. He spent a number of seasons there with some fantastic players, went down to Melbourne, but we all know him as the, well, arguably the greatest Perth Wildcats coach. He has been there since 2013. He has won five championships. He's an NBL Cup winner, NBL Coach of the Year in 2011. He's also was an assistant coach of the Boomers, and I'm talking none other than the legend, Trevor Gleeson. Trevor, fantastic to have you on.
G'day, boys. Yeah, thanks for the invite, and what an introduction. I hope I can live up to the compliments.
Yeah, I wish I'd taught Brad how to say Warrnambool. Jeez.
Is that, if it's not in Sydney, I don't know it, mate.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. The other week you thought Launceston was up the road from Hobart. So, honestly, there's a little bit of a worry. Now, let's start with the stuff we don't know about you, Trevor, or that the greater population doesn't know about you, and that is, how did you get into basketball? What was your introduction to it in Warrnambool? And I believe you were a player initially, as most of us were, so I'm curious as to how your journey began.
Yeah, no, I grew up in Warrnambool, 3 hours south of Melbourne, and had family that was strong in basketball. My brothers played state level in Australia championships and was always around there. Mum was a life member, always at the basketball, volunteering from anywhere from doorkeeper to treasurer, and it was just basketball in my blood all the way through. And we used to have that beautiful Warrnambool Seaside Carnival at the Australia Day long weekend, yep. And yep. All the the great teams from Adelaide and the great teams from Melbourne back then would come in, and it was a fierce rivalry everywhere, and all the new imports had come in, and it was just 3 days of just basketball heaven. And I fell in love. I played the sport all the way until I was 18. I played in Australia, a couple of Australian championships, but then I had an accident at work, industrial accident, where I almost finished up in a wheelchair, and I spent 2 months in hospital. And when you're 18 and have an accident, you can't play football or basketball. The only really thing that I could stay involved in, something I love, was to start coaching. So that's how my coaching journey started.
Can I ask, you're youngest of four, is that right?
Five. Yeah, I got five. Three older brothers and one sister.
Wow, that would have been I'm the youngest of three, so that would be and three boys, that would be a very busy family.
Yeah, it was very competitive. Other than my brothers, played football, basketball, swimming. It was just built into the family that you compete, and getting beaten by your brothers all the time certainly gave an edge on the
yeah,
side.
I hear you. I hear you.
and there was no love given at all. It was get better or get out. So, tough bringing up, but also made you very competitive. As you can still see to this day, I'm very competitive on the sidelines.
Never noticed it. Never noticed.
No, likewise, not at all. Actually, you're mentioning the Warrnambool Seaside Carnival, which straight away took me back to those St Kilda teams, and Cal Bruton bringing in that Geelong team, and Ken Richardson with the West Adelaide team. That really was a major tournament. Is it still regarded that way? I know you're a long way away in Perth, but you still have some ideas. The Warrnambool Seaside Carnival is still something?
Or is it? Yeah, it's not. It's kind of died a little bit when they changed the holidays. It falls on the 26th now, so it kind of lost that that shine. But I just finished reading Lindsay Gaze's book, and that's a fantastic book, and it just brought back those memories of, watching Andrew when he was an 18-year-old. I got a picture next to the grasshopper, and actually a funny story. It's not funny, but Lindsay Gaze never had a coaching board. He used to come down and use 20-cent coins on the ground.
Oh, my coach used to do that. Cliff Martin used to do that as well.
Yeah, and I used to sit behind the bench. You could get right up close to all these big stars, and Lindsay would bring the coins out, and You know, I was collecting cans and taking drink bottles back to get some lollies, and I'm always looking for money. But then he came down the next year. I remember he didn't bring money. He had chalk. He wrote on the ground. So it was, it was a fascination just to watch Lindy and how five guys could play as one, and it really engrossed me at a very, very early young age.
Can I ask you, your first NBL gig was with the Bullets. Am I right, as a development coach?
Correct. Yeah.
And who was the head coach then? Was that Joey?
Yeah. No, that was Curly. Yeah, Brian Curly.
Curl. He
went 3 years. Steve McLeod was his assistant. Actually, I interviewed for the State League job. I just came back from backpacking around the world, and I interviewed for the State League. And they rang me up the next day, and they said, "We've got some good news and bad news." He said, "The bad news, you didn't get the State League job." I said, "Oh, well, bad luck." He said, "Well, the good news is we want to hire you as a development coach with the Brisbane Bullets." To go on there to work and rebound for Leroy Loggins, Steve Woodbury, that was CJ Bruton's first year back in the NBL. You know, and Curly, such an iconic coach. And, you know, wow. I learned so many things. Curly was really an inspiration and a mentor for me starting off. And it was just such a great learning curve to have those 3 years in Brisbane.
Now, wait a minute. I just learned something a second ago, something you just said, that you were backpacking around the world. So how long did you do that, and where did you go?
Yeah, I went for 6 months and stayed up going for 3 years. from everywhere, from America to Europe to South Africa, back to London and did the work thing, then to the Middle East, then back over to South America. So, I did a fair bit.
Well, did you catch any basketball along that time? I'm sure you would have had to have wandered into a stadium here and there, surely.
Yeah, it was funny. I brought tickets to go and watch the Perth Wildcats play the Houston Rockets in the McDonald's Cup.
No.
Wow.
Five. Yeah. So I didn't finish up going there because I didn't finish up going to Israel on a holiday. But, yeah, I gave it to a mate of mine, the game. So that would have been a fairly different thing. I think Adrian Hurley was coaching the team back then.
Yes. Yes.
What a small world. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So you then moved away from the Bullets, and Bob Thornton, the former NBA player, I believe, then invited you for the CBA for the Quad City Thunder, and you went over there.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't get a job in Australia after we all got fired at Brisbane and didn't make the playoffs. I tried to get a job everywhere, and so I was just talking to my brother at the time. He said, "Well, why don't you go to America?" So I jumped on a plane, went to LA, didn't know anybody at all. I talked to Bruce Palmer, that he knew anybody that I could get in and work coaching clinics. And Bruce got me the contact to coach the Nike Real Run in Los Angeles. And then I built up some contacts, and then one contact led to another one. I worked at camp in Las Vegas. I got the Greyhound bus over there because that was the cheapest way. And certainly the Greyhound bus, the clientele on the bus is pretty seedy, and I was keeping everything close to home. And I went to this camp, and Bob Thornton was working it, and we finished up rooming together. And Bob was just finishing playing, and then we went and did another couple of camps all over California. And it was funny, then Bob rang up about 3 months later on and said, "Trev, I just got a job." And Bobby Knight just got fired at Indiana, and the head coach at Quad City Thunder went to Indiana as assistant coach. And then Bob Thornton got the head coaching job at Quad City. So he rang me up and said, "Will you come and be my assistant?" I said, "Yeah, no worries." He said, "Where the bloody hell is it?" I got a job out of Bobby Knight getting fired from Indiana. So
Where is it though, Trevor? Where is
it? It's right on, Iowa and Illinois, on the border. Obviously, okay. Four cities. They call it Quad City. And I coached there for the year with Bob, and halfway through the year, the league folded. Isaiah Thomas had it, and he was trying to sell it to David Stern, and they got in a bit of a tit for tat, and David Turner said, well, I'm not going to buy it. I'll go and start my own league. And he started up the D League.
Which is now the G League. On, yeah, which is now the G League.
Yeah, the G League. Yeah, correct. So, I bounced around there for about 4 or 5 years, finished up head coach in the Sioux Falls Skyforce. We missed the playoffs. I think we went 23-25 in my first year. I took over the year before from Stacey King that used to be with the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah,
it was just a great learning experience. The talent level there. I think CJ Bruton was over there playing at the same time. He was trying to crack it with Portland. So we would run into each other a couple of times over there in the minor leagues.
Brilliant.
Okay, let's jump to Townsville. Was that a bit of a shock to the system in terms of like how organized was Townsville as a club at that time? Were they sort of hovering on that sort of administration? Were in a bad place, or did you get there when it was really rolling and at the top of their game?
Yeah, no, it was still rolling when I was there. Yeah. David Carmichael, great operator, was having that thing. It was sold out the first 2-3 years, it was a ticketed event that you had to get. And then as soon as he went out of it, it just kind of started getting slowly and slowly it declined, which was a shame because it was such a passionate place. And, I remember talking to Nick Marvin when I came over here. And he was flying to Townsville to see what they were doing so successful and picking ideas out of the Townsville Crocs to bring back here in Perth. So. There was a great 5 years up there, and very much enjoyed the community and the basketball up there.
I got to say that was my favourite venue to play in out of Australia. I loved it up there. The crowds were great. The atmosphere was fantastic, and that was my favourite venue. So after Townsville, you then had a stint in Melbourne, but I'm just going to ask two questions about this. Number one, I want to hear your story about A, coaching Paddy Mills, but then losing him through the season as well, which obviously, if I'm not mistaken, that's when it happened. And that would not have been easy losing a superstar like him. And then your move to an AFL team. Talk to me.
Yeah. Well, in Melbourne, Seamus hired me down in Melbourne and he really wanted to clean house out of there. There's been some issues beforehand. So I was looking back, I was probably too hard at that stage on the guys, but Paddy was absolutely fantastic. He was, he was professional. He was, just so much attention that he was getting from the popularity aspect. And I think we were either first or second when he was with us. And then he got a huge offer in China that finished up going over to the finish of the season in China. I think the NBA, because of the NBA lockout, was that time.
Yep. Yep.
So, to lose an Australian that we could never replace, we had our imports and we quickly went south in that that time frame. And it was, I probably now I'm a little bit more experienced, so I could handle that a little better than I did during that period of time. And Seamus sold the team and, the new owners came in, they wanted to bring their own guys in. So I was out on the ear and, then I was packing my bags up in the office and held my box, walking down the stairs, going to my car. And then Brad Scott walked up because we used to train where North Melbourne trained and the offices were the same. And I got to know Brad pretty well. And Brad said, hey, listen, if you're not doing nothing, come and work for us for the rest of the year. So I spent the rest of the year with North Melbourne and just going into the meetings and seeing, went on a couple of road trips with them and just bringing different ideas around it. And then the following year, they said, no, we can't. We haven't got any money to hire you. And I just put some ideas that I thought from basketball skill-wise, the ball handling, the handle, the hand-eye coordination. So I came up with a series of drills. Then the AFL players loved it. Hawthorne invited me in for a trial run. I said, Trev, come in and see what you're doing. And I got in there and it was, the guys were fantastic. They love what we're doing. I finish up working 2 days a week. They're going through all skills with all their 45 players and the rehab players. And, just to be in that environment with Clarko And then there's about six other head coaches there, Chris Fagan, Simo, Beveridge, Bolton was there, just to see how they operated and how they, you know, gave the players some power, or not power, gave the players the environment to, you know, speak freely and take leadership role. And that really stuck with me because my coaching was really, you know, my way or the highway. And then I started to give the players a lot more ownership. And I was conscious of that when I came over to Perth. I want the players to have their say, and I want there to take leadership out there. And that was a really big focus of giving some power over to the players to run things. And, you know, we've benefited for that for the last 8 years.
I love hearing those stories where, you know, great coaches talk to other great coaches. Yeah. And just, do you still keep in contact with, do you still keep in contact with them?
Yeah. I was over here last in the COVID, we caught up, we had to go and have a coffee, but we had to walk. We couldn't stay at the restaurant because of the compliance of the AFL. But catch up with him. I got to know Craig Bellamy in Brisbane. He was an assistant coach.
The Broncos.
With the Broncos, yeah. So he was the video guy. So we used to use the same video equipment. So I've maintained that relationship. And, you know, I know Simo from over here, the West Coast, and, you know, I still got a lot of mentors in the States that that I still stay in touch with.
So, Trevor, when you went over to Perth, did you have to win the Perth crowd over? Because their memories of you would be coming in with Townsville and, you know, knocking
Corey
them out
Williams.
Of the, knocking the air, Corey running around with his singlet and John really running around with that head. You know, did you have to sort of win them over, or did you just think, I'll just do my job and they'll come on board?
Yeah, well, it helped when we got James Innes. I knew my job was going to be a lot easier when we had James Innes signed up in that first year. But, you know, to come in such a professional program and the whole winning program, Bevo were doing a great job while he was here. And I was like, well, how are we going to take it to the next level? And it's, you know, that was mindful that the pressure associated being here in the Perth Wildcats, the expectation to win, you know, being in the grand finals the 2 years before, how can we make that next step? So there was a lot of those factors. And I think one thing I learned from Curly in Brisbane, he said, Trev, the day you start worrying about your job is the day you're not doing your job. So I decided then I'm not going to worry about anything, that I'm just going to focus in and do the best thing that I can possibly do, is build relationships, build the chemistry, get an environment where the guys are open and honest with each other. And that was my focus. Not to, you know, listen to the outside noise.
Sure.
Great advice.
Yeah, well, but I'm interested in how you handle the pressure, because there is pressure. There is the expectation that I mean, I know at the start of the season, Brad and I were saying, yeah, Perth will be in the playoffs. Don't worry about that. While people on the Eastern Seaboard were saying, oh, is this the year? I mean, you must hear that every year. Is this the year? Or they didn't have enough imports, or they've lost Nick Kay, or Damo's gone. There's always that sort of pressure. And then you've put a team together that won the NBL Cup and is probably travelling along very nicely. Now you add Will Magne. I mean, the expectation is that you walk in and you win the championship 3-0. Doesn't matter who you're playing. How do you cope with knowing that that's around you? Can you actually shut that all out?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, we've lost a lot of experience in the last 3-4 years, like from Matty Knight, Sean Redditch, Greg Heyer, Damian Martin, has been through this process. This is, you know, we only have Jesse here that's left out of that group. And before, we had a senior group that they could be through that experience and block it out and lock into what we're doing. Now we've got a whole new generation. Actually, I was talking yesterday about 1995 because it was a heritage round. Then I looked over and I said, oh, there's five guys here that are not even born in 1995. you know, so the expectation's always going to be there in Perth. And we decided long ago, I was a big Get Smart fan, and Maxwell Smart had the cone of silence, and they come down there in the cone of silence. So we call it a very similar shield, starting with S, and we put that around and let everything else bounce off that. And what happens inside this cone of silence is, this is us, this is our team, this is our pressure that we put on ourselves to play the right way. And you know, it has worked so far, and hopefully that'll carry on for the rest of the season.
Okay. I want to change tack here a little bit, Trev, and talk a little bit about the personal side, which a lot of people won't know. Your beautiful wife, Dawn, you have two fantastic kids. But what a lot of people wouldn't know is how you become an advocate for women's health. Obviously, your wife was diagnosed with cancer, but you have been such a great family man. That couldn't have been easy.
No, that was the toughest period of my life, our lives. Dawn was diagnosed with breast cancer when we were in Townsville. And, you know, Dawn's from South Dakota. When I was over there, that's the best thing that happened to me. I met my wife, and we had two kids under two, and she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and we had no family whatsoever. And that was a big instigator of getting back close to Victoria and Melbourne near my family so we can have some support. And, you know, and just 4 years ago, the other day, actually, it was, she got diagnosed the second time that the breast cancer had come back. And, she was so determined to get through it and so feisty to fight breast cancer, and the passion that she had just excelled out of her. And she wanted to help, you know, the next generation. And we're big supporters of Breast Cancer Care WA over here that supports women and helps them with, you know, some vouchers or to get a cleaner in or help kids with babysitting to put back in our community here. And we're very passionate and happy to say we've got a pink game coming up on May the 21st, and all those funds will go back into, you know, helping women through the breast cancer period, because it is tough.
Yeah, mate. What I can I just say to all our avid listeners as well? We asked Trevor if it was okay to talk about that, and you were absolutely, I'm fine. So thank you, and you are just a great man. I mean, there's all that basketball stuff, but I've got goosebumps hearing you, just the passion. So congratulations, mate. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, anything that we can help someone, and it's really early detection. Dawn's cancer got early. She had a lump in the shower, and she wouldn't go to the doctor. And I said, if you don't go to the doctor, I'm going to put you in the car and take you down there myself. And thank God she did. And it came back, and we got it early, got treated. And, you know, so far, so good.
It's almost hard to get back to basketball now after that. But, look, a question that's always intrigued me, and I've always wanted to ask you, but in talking to you just for the last, you know, 20 or so minutes, I'm pretty sure I know what your answer is going to be. But does it bother you at all that some of your personal success, because your ability to handle very good basketball players and get them to buy in and perform as a group, you know, that mythos of Wildcats basketball, I mean, you've built that, you know, and you know, does it bother you at all when you're, I mean, you would have heard this, people saying, oh, yeah, well, yeah, anyone could coach the Wildcats. I mean, they've got all the money. Yeah, anybody could do it. And, I mean, obviously that isn't the case. I mean, Connor Henry couldn't do it. Anyway, but moving right on, does that ever bug you when you hear that, or you just go water off a duck's back?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Sometimes it does. A lot of people, you know, don't know what goes on here, but it's one of my things as a coach, you've got to get buy-in. Now, I have to get buy-in from our best players, our youngest players, and the demographic is 35, 36-year-old, and now I've got an 18-year-old. How do I relate, and how do I communicate, and how do I get them to buy into something bigger? And I think every player wants to improve. Every player wants to get to the NBA. And you have to give them some tools and freedom to do that. And we're very stringent on the court. We're playing the right way. And if a guy doesn't pass the ball to the open man, I'm going to get on him, because there's nothing better than playing a game that, you know, if you're open, your teammate's going to pass him the ball. Yeah. And the other part is to have your teammates back. If he's struggling, you pick him up off the ground. You know, you console him. And if I'm going into battle, and the guy sitting next to me, if I screw up, he's got my back. You sure I'm going to pay that back? And if you get that environment in the team, it's a little bit easier to get buy-in from the guys, because the team ethos that you said really overrules that. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to have some great guys that brought in straight away, and, you know, we're getting the fruits of that reward, even though that they've retired.
I know. The body and I have been probably your number one fan for this season and seasons before. But I know, being a player and a coach that has been in that area with Gorgian and stuff, mate, you take out all the players, the players you've had to coach, you've brought in new players, you've brought in new assistant coaches, because a lot of them have moved on to different things. Yep. Mate, that comes from the top. and that's you. And I know you are just the good guy that says, oh, no, you know, I've got great. But that, without a doubt, gets led from the front, and the front is the coach, mate. So you have to take all that credit. I know you won't, but it does.
And also, Trevor,
I say that.
Yeah, Trevor, also, we were pissy on your behalf that your name wasn't right up there prominently being discussed as the next Olympic coach.
Yep.
And people were saying, oh, well, he's got great players. Well, what's an Olympic team if not a bunch of great players? You would have been perfect. And not that there's anything wrong with Brian, but we were pumping up your tyres for that. So if you weren't listening, you should have been.
I'll start listening now and get my ego stroked a little bit.
Now, at this time, we start to ask about players, and all we're looking for is like a one-word, one-sentence, just something that you can wrap those players up. So I'm going to start, and Boddy and I are going to have a couple here. And like we said, just something that gives – first one, James Ennis.
Dynamic. He was a class above everybody in that league without a question.
But not the MVP.
Well, he does have the trophy still in the Docklands in Melbourne. He's still in there.
We
have a good laugh about that in Melbourne.
Okay, I've got one for you that might be a bit of a throwback. Rozelle Ellis.
My favourite import player.
Really?
He was tough as nails. Yeah. He was just a great guy. And do you know, Rozelle now is a policeman in Seattle. And he often talked about that, what he was going to do post-career. And I just found out about 3 months ago that he was actually a policeman, that he said he was in Seattle. So, yeah, I can't wait to see him and congratulate him.
Yeah.
From this import to another import, Corey Williams.
Homicide, huh? I remember my first conversation and my mentor back in the States said, Trev, there's a little bit of New York bullshit in him. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he's going to tell you a lot of stories. And, you know, Corey could actually back up what he said. You know, he would talk a lot of smack, but he would actually get back on the court and back it up. So, look, I had a lot of time for Corey, and I know it didn't end well up there, but you know, he was great for us, and I just had to keep him on the straight and narrow away from the court.
Well, I do commentary with him, and he has nothing but love for you. Absolute nothing but love.
He's done really well.
I got an Aussie for you, Nick Kay.
Yeah, he is. You know, he was a blessing. He's so hard on himself to get better, to work. You know, I wish I could coach him for the rest of his career. He's unbelievable what he does on the court, and just old-fashioned New South Wales countryman, just rolls the sleeves up, goes to work, and doesn't complain one thing.
All right, next one, Damian Martin.
The smiling assassin. Damo, you know, I wouldn't tell Damo what assignment he has just before the game. I didn't want Damo to think he just played natural instinct. He's the most inspiring player. You know, he can get out there and change the game on the defense and inspire his teammates, because he would come off at a timeout and he'd be dripping, you know, his teeth broken or his nose or something going. He's out there playing and he's giving it his all, and you're his teammate and you're looking over there and seeing him. If you're not giving your all, you know, you don't deserve to be on the court with him. He's such an inspiration. And I'm sad that he didn't leave the game, that he had 15,000 people at the Perth Arena to cheer him off and people to carry him off. It was Damo's way just to go out in the sunset, nice and quiet, and I'll retire. And hopefully one day that we might be able to have a game for him and get the richly deserves that he's earned.
Nice.
He did a play. I watched this league from the moment it started. I was covering it from day one. And he did a play that is probably in the top two or three plays I've ever seen. It happened at the arena. You'd remember it, I'm sure, Trevor. He ran down Gary Irvin on a fast break, blocked the shot, leapt out of the court to save the ball, flung it into somebody on your team. You went down and scored. It was just like people would have been happy to do one of those two things. Actually, it was really three, because he had to land from blocking the shot and then chase. You know, I can still picture it perfectly from where I was sitting. It was just, as you say, inspirational, and it was a defensive end.
Yeah, and he jumped and tapped the ball in, and then his back went straight into the chairs of our bench. You know, we have that on film, and we watch every new Wildcat that comes in. We show that film and say, this is what expected to play. This is the Wildcats way. And, you know, we did that yesterday when Will Magne was his first game.
Wow. Wow. That is a high standard to hold him to, that's for sure. Yeah. I've got one more for you, and then we're going to wrap. Bryce Cotton.
The most unselfish superstar I've ever seen come across. Bryce, his skill set, I still remember doing the alley-oop dunk in Utah, and that's what I said. Yeah. I turned around and said to the coach next to me, said, he'd be really good. He'd be really good in the NBL, and we were just lucky to get him at events. And just he's everything for the team. You know, the game that he got 45 in the final, he didn't have a shot in the first quarter. He didn't score in the first quarter and still finished the game with 45 in the grand final. It's unbelievable that, you know, he's such a joy to go. And even last year when he was, you know, in that COVID time and he wanted to get out of his contract, I wasn't going to let him get out of the country, mate. I was going to the airport and block him at the gate. There's no way known that you're going to leave first. And I'm doing everything I can to keep you here. He's a fair dinkum superstar and a champion guy.
He certainly is. Trev, I just wanted to, we've got so much that we would love to talk to you, but I won't keep you anymore. It's that time where we have to say we cannot thank you enough. I mean, we haven't even really talked about the Will Magnes and all of these things that, you know, the players you've got in this team, but maybe we might try and get you back on another time this year. But it was all about, we just wanted to hear about you and your life and everything. So we can't thank you enough. We wish you all the best, not that you'll need it for this season. And I'm really looking forward to you playing in yet another grand final series, but I won't jinx it for you. And mate, thank you so much for coming on. It's so nice of you.
Yep, thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, Brad and Boddy. It's a pleasure, and thanks for the invite. And hopefully, I'll be listening a little bit more.
Thanks, mate. See you later. That was fabulous, Boddy. Yep. You know, like I really looked forward to doing coaches, but I got to be honest with you, I don't think I've really had a long conversation with Trevor Gleeson. Obviously with Gorge and you know, Dean Vickerman, he was once in Sydney, and even Simon Mitchell, I see him. I haven't had a lot to do with Trevor, but I never hear anything but great things about him. Yeah, even like, you know, like Joey and Connor, I've had things to do with, but Trevor's been one, and man, he was impressive. God, I love him. I really do.
The thing is that people form an opinion based, like I used to find this, and you'd find this as a player. They see you as a player, and that would form their opinion of you. They don't know you as a human being.
You mean like my commentary?
Yeah, well, there you go. Like I'd write something in the paper, and someone would say, this guy's a knucklehead. Someone would say, this guy's a genius. So they make an opinion based on, and there's a lot of opinions about Trevor Gleeson based on how he prowls the sideline, how he works the refs.
And he works them brilliantly.
Yeah, but when we sit him down and we find he's just a really interesting human being. I mean, traveling around the world, all that stuff he's done is fabulous.
Well, that's what I love hearing. And, you know, to all our listeners, that's what we want you to hear. You know, we want you to hear those things that if you walk away from this going, wow, I didn't know that about Trevor Gleeson, that's what this show's about. So that's what we love. All right, let's move on. We obviously have just finished round 17.
Yep.
So there was four games. We know the winners. Anyone, anything stick out to you, mate?
Oh, I'm just thinking the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix are really back to the pack now. They're so disappointing. You know, they had such a good team, good players coming into it. Then Ryan Brokoff, you're sort of thinking, we were thinking at the time, they're going to challenge for the championship.
Absolutely,
And they're about as far away from it as Cairns right now, the way they're playing basketball. I'm really disappointed with that. There's going to have to be some changes in the offseason for sure.
Well, when you're playing Mitch Creek and he's getting literally no shots, mate, I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to work. He was 0-6. He had a donut.
Yeah, but it's part of that's on him too. I mean, there's been an elephant in the room, as you know, but like with him, but it's on him too. If he's a leading scorer, he's got to demand the ball. He's got to be Mitch Creek, but they're not getting the ball to the right people. And I just see some problems in their
future. Well, let me ask you this then. Do you think the stuff that went on off the court has affected that team?
Well, you can't say, we can't say because we're not directly involved, but I would wonder how it wouldn't have affected the team. Yeah. It must have affected the team, you know.
All right. So, let's move on to round 18. There's 10 games in this round.
Wow. That's like the big show all over again.
Well, it's a big show. Oh, it's a big band show tonight. Oh, baby, come on. Oh,
yeah. Boom, boom. Okay. Mate, talk to me. We're going to run through them. Illawarra versus Adelaide. To this, now everyone knows we do this on a Monday. Because that's when we can get the coaches. So Illawarra versus Adelaide for Tuesday down at the Wynn Entertainment Centre. I'm down there calling that game. Who you got?
Adelaide.
I'm going Illawarra. Phoenix versus New Zealand on Wednesday.
Where is that?
In Phoenix.
Melbourne. Well, look, Phoenix has to win that. And I think Tom Abercrombie, we pulled his hamstring late in the game.
That looked bad, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, I think they're done.
Yep, I agree. Bullets versus Kings at the Bullets Thursday night.
Bullets.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Another Thursday night, RAC Arena, Perth versus Melbourne.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's you have to go with Perth, don't you?
100%. Yep, I'm with you. 100%. Yep, love it. Friday night, Phoenix backing up against Cairns. Mate, Cairns are done. No, I can't pick them again.
Cairns are playing on hard, but they've run out of talent. That's going to be a Phoenix win. It has to be a Phoenix win.
Yeah. Brisbane versus Perth Saturday night in Brisbane. Interesting one. Everyone backing up?
Yeah. Oh, that is a good one. Jeez. Because Brisbane have been known to knock them off from time to time. Will Magnay coming in? There'll be a bit of feeling. Ooh, jeez. I'm going to go with Perth because you have to. But that would not surprise me if there was a little bit of an upset there.
Yeah, I'm going with Perth as well. But you're right. That's with there's a bit that can go either way. Illawarra versus New Zealand on Saturday night. Illawarra again.
Illawarra. Yeah.
Melbourne versus Phoenix Sunday.
Melbourne.
Kings versus Adelaide next Sunday. That isn't a mistake. They did play yesterday. Being again, we're doing this on a Sunday. Kings, mate, they lost that game. They had it down by 16. DJ was nowhere to be seen, and then bang, bang, bang.
Bang, yeah.
How good was he in that? And, mate, I was at the game, and he is holding his hand up going, well, look at this, and all the players. And, Adelaide, I think they've left their run too late. But, geez, they're nice to watch.
Yeah, they can be. They can be. If their best version shows up, and they'll feel good about themselves now, having beaten Sydney there from 16 down, they'll feel good about themselves. I think I like Adelaide for that.
Yeah, again, and like we were, and then it's Cairns versus Perth in Cairns, and we're going Perth. I don't even need to ask you that. Again, this is how we always do this, don't we? Things change so much after one or two games. You've got Perth playing three games this round. Anything could happen. Injuries, we know it all. So it's huge. Boddy, that's it, mate. Anything good? BOT on NAGY.com? Anything?
Rose and Rattler, come on.
Oh, the finish off of the games for the Kings again. I'm dying, mate. This is killing me. They've got a chance, and they've done this four or five times, and they burp the shot up. I mean, mate, they've got to start to run a play. This, leave it to me and go flat, or let me come off a screen or non-ball.
Yes.
Man, that's got to stop. We have to get a play. And they wait till late, and they give it all, mate. And then, Kickett throws up a Hail Mary because the ball's on the floor and he tries to make it. Mate, it's not working, and this has happened a number of times. It's frustrating.
Now, listeners, I hope you all noticed that Brad, in the course of that particular rant, said, we have to do something different. We. That's the Sydney Kings. That's not Brad Rosen, independent media commentator. That's a Sydney Kings former captain.
I'm not commentating tonight. Anyway, can I say that we lost to your team, the Adelaide 36ers.
You didn't lose to my team. I really like Cairns at the moment. Anyway, because I think they're playing with a lot of heart. My nasty this week is halftime interviews with players on the TV. There are a number of people who are doing this. I'm not going to name names, but there are a number of people who are doing this. You're not one of them. So you're in the clear. Ooh. Who ask a question, do not listen to what is being said, and then ask another question which has already just been answered, because in their first question, the person answering it answered what will become the second question. So anytime you hear that player saying, well, like I said, you know that the guy that was asking the questions really wasn't paying attention. And if that's all you're paid to do, stand in a stadium and ask two questions at halftime, or a couple before the game, or a couple after the game, for God's sake, listen. It's not that hard.
Good call. Good call from Boddy. Hey, Very interesting. You're not going to believe it, but Andre Lemanis, mate, is leaving to Japan. Who would have thought?
I'm stunned and shocked.
Body only said it about a month ago, or maybe even 2 months ago, but what a shock. Mate, BOTINAGY.com, basketball on the internet. That's the man. He's got some great stuff this week, how Brisbane should lock in CJ. He's done a Back to the Future thing. I love that article, by the way. That was great. And how just really, really good stuff. Phoenix in free fall. And then you've got, you know, all what he wraps up the week. So please check it out. To Piranha Media, thank you so much. We are getting massive hits and we're loving that. Yes. And it's great feedback. Body, thanks for another good week, mate.
A pleasure. See you next week.
Bye all. Have a great week. Mate, there was only 4 games on the weekend. Did you get a chance to watch your Vikings?
Yes, I'm done. I'm finished with Vikings. I'm all the way through.
Is that because you don't know how to use Netflix, or you just
no, I don't know how to use Netflix. There's a new basketball show on there too, where we've got and it doesn't matter. It's about a college coach that's been sacked and he's doing a high school team, and looks like Rick Pitino. Yeah, there's some stuff on it that's worth watching. that you know, it's still basketball related.